They got it pretty close, but you can't hardly train them. All right. Good to see everyone tonight. We appreciate you coming. I'm going to do just a little, maybe a little bit of Bible study, maybe a little bit of a, share a little bit of information with you. Kind of miss the college students when they're gone, don't we? Yeah, we should be having a good service over at Brother Waters Church in Tampa. And we'll be excited to hear about that. Now, the trouble is, when they get home, it is also time for them to take the spring break. Now, they'll deserve it because they're really working hard these 4 days. But they'll get home and probably pull out, most of them will probably pull out on a Friday morning to start the college break. And some of them will get to go all the way home, which is quite a ways. We have students come from several miles away. Open your Bibles to the first book, to the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 16. I'm just going to cover a little bit of routine stuff here, but I feel like it's needed. Sometimes, even as a pastor that's been speaking to a lot of the same folks for a long time in our church, sometimes I take for granted that folks know some things that maybe somehow they missed. And sometimes it's just fundamental stuff that we need to know. Like, if you go to the book of Genesis, that's the seedbed of the Bible. That's the foundation. You need to know quite a bit about what started off in Genesis, actually is finished up and completed in the book of Revelation. For instance, you got the tree of life in the book of Genesis. You got the tree of life showing up again in the book of Revelation and so forth. Now, I'm not going prophetically with anything tonight. I want to just share a little bit of information. There was a Chinese general, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Almost all of them started with Sun, S-U-N. I think his name was Sun Tees or something like that. But he's famous, he's quoted a lot. And he made this statement. He said, if you know yourself, but not your enemy, that every victory you've gained, you will also suffer a defeat. That's Chinese reasoning, and some of it's pretty right. There's a Chinese saying that, why have you become my enemy? I have not tried to help you yet. Now, you think on that one a little bit. That's exactly what we have in America today. The more we have given, the more we are expected to give. I never forget a fellow showing up in the church office one time. This has happened several times, as that story pops in mind. A couple of others want me to use that too. But anyway, he showed up in the office and he was wanting a handout. And I looked in my billfold, and I didn't have much in there, but I had $10, and I gave it to him. And he looked at it, crammed it in his pocket, mad at me, and slammed the door. Now, he left $10 richer than I was, but he was mad because it was small, because it wasn't enough. I remember one night at home, I got a call, and that was back when the truck stop was still out here. And I got a call, and a guy told me, he said, I'm out here at the truck stop. My family's in the car, and we have nowhere to stay tonight. And he was getting some little something done to the car, and out of money, and just, and he kept on talking. So I finally said, and by the way, the boys' dorm down at the college right in front of the tower building was a motel. We bought it and turned it into the boys' dorm. Well, at that time, it was still an active motel, and it was probably one of the cheaper ones in town. And so I knew the guy down there. So I told him, I said, I'll stand for one night's room, and I'll call ahead. And when you get down there, he'll be expecting you. And put the family up for the night there. And in a few minutes, he'd gotten there, and he called me back. You sent me to a motel with no restaurant at it. So help me God. Had her own Bible. In other words, he intended to also get a room and get fed and get everything. And that's an attitude, isn't it? what an attitude like that sometime we have. But knowing the enemy is important. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that thought tonight. In this sense, in Genesis chapter 16, we are going to find out about the birth of a man by the name of Ishmael. Ishmael, either way you want to say it. And in chapter 16, and then we'll jump over to about chapter 21 and read a little bit more about him. Here's what I want to say to you. There are folks, and this is a lie that's pushed to people that don't check it out. Would you believe there are a lot of people think that Islam was started by Ishmael?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is.
And so their justification is that Abraham's our father, and we go way back to Ishmael, and it's amazing how they push that stuff, and even people that have got college so-called educations, and some of them in the news media, don't know any better. When you don't know what the Bible says, you are still lacking in a lot of what you ought to know. There's no doubt about that. Look at it here, and I'm just going to touch a few high spots here tonight in this thought. If I won't finish it tonight, but maybe I'll finish it later. I'm going to look at the story in Genesis. Then I'm going to try to talk to you a little bit about the history of the true beginning of Islam, how it started. Then I'm going to try to tell you the differences between the Sunni and the Shiites. Now, you hear those two words in the news all the time. And I heard one news person the other night say, "I just can't tell the difference between them." Well, you ought to know the difference. It'll help you to know that the wars that are going on and we're involved in are religious wars. You might call it civil wars between a split and a religion. And here we've injected and spent our tax money over there, and all that we have done, and how we wasted it, not only money, but lives. And I still am not sure if our leadership understands what it is all about. I think the president understands more than anybody else, and he's on the wrong side of it most of the time. And that's my opinion. But anyway, I'll try to show you a little difference between the Sunnis and the Shiites, and then kind of wrap it up as to what all the wars are about. The sad part is a lot of our young people are brainwashed into the lie that I'm going to be talking to you about tonight. Look at it in Genesis 16. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, "Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her." And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the maid, the Egyptian. I want you to notice, she was not a she was Egyptian. She was not of the same as Sarai and Abram, and his name had not yet been changed to Abraham, and he was a Hebrew. But here's the Egyptian maid. And so it says, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, "My wrong be upon thee." Now, here you got a Sarai admitting she's done wrong, but also that she's done her husband wrong when she makes this statement, "My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom." And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. And Abram said unto Sarai, "Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee." And when Sarai dwelt hardly with her, She fled from her face. Now, it's real easy to get two things mixed up. Here, the maid runs while she's conceived, pregnant. Later on, after the boy's 13 years old, she runs again. We'll find that in chapter 21. Easy to kind of mix them up. Now it says in verse 7, and the angel of the Lord found her by the fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarah's maid, whence camest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress, Sarai. The angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress, and submit thyself unto her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall be not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. Now, here we have the fact that Ishmael is going to be born, and we note the name Ishmael. God shall hear is what it means. Most names have a biblical names have a meaning like that behind them. Now here's a prophecy that is so true still today. Verse 12, and he will be a wild man, and his hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren, and the brethren will later turn out to be Jews, of course. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me. For she said, have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Wherefore the well was called Beer Lahara. Now the word beer, we are familiar with that today, but how many of you know it was a Bible word? Beer means a cool, clear drink. Beer don't quite fit that description anymore, but that's what it meant in the Bible. And so here was where the water was located. And so she says, behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86, when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram. Now move on over to chapter 21. I'm just trying to get to the story here a little bit. In chapter 21, the boy's grown. Now what we had happen here with Sarai was like a lot of folks do today. God had made a promise to give them their own son, but Sarai jumped in to help God out. She made a terrible mistake. Abram was part of the mistake. You can't blame one any more than the other. But at the same time, they couldn't wait. And that's the biggest trouble we have on our prayers getting answered, is waiting and trusting. And so she didn't wait and trust, and she made a mistake, and that mistake is still being reaped today. But now don't get me wrong. All of Ishmael's descendants did not become Muslim. And we are talking about a race of people that went into a lot of different tribes. I want to put this in lest I forget it. Islam was not founded till about 610. That would be 610 years at least after Christ was born. Now we're going back here in the book of Genesis, and you can look, if you got a Bible that's got some dates in it, mine don't have, but you're going back here to Abram way back before Christ was born. So you add the 600 years to whatever it is, you look in your margin there, maybe you can see it, 1200 years or 1500 years or whatever it was. So Islam was not started until after 600 years after Christ. So for him to go back and say, I'm claiming it all the way back to Ishmael, is crazy and untrue. And such a falsehood, you wouldn't think folks would believe it, but there's some that do. So in chapter 21 now of Genesis, Isaac is going to be born. And born to Abraham when he's 100 years old. Verse 5, and Isaac was born unto him. Verse 6, and Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh. Now most of you know the name Isaac means laughter. Because not only did Sarah laugh at the promise, but Abram laughed at the promise also. And so here, Sarah is admitting something, though, in verse 6. And Sarah said, God made me to laugh so that all that hear will laugh with me. So I've often said this, if Sarah stepped out on the back porch and called Isaac for supper, she hollered, laughter, and all the neighbors laughed. Now, Isaac's name meant laughter, but it also showed the doubt that they'd had at the promise when God had made them the promise of the birth of Isaac, and when they got ahead of God and tried to do something on their own. And I've seen a lot of folks make the mistake of trying to think, well, God can't do it if I don't kind of engineer it for him, kind of work out a plan for him. You got to watch out for that business. And this was a failure here. Now, anyway, Isaac is born. Now, in verse 9 of chapter 21, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had born unto Abraham, mocking. Now, here you got about a 13-year-old boy, and if you keep reading the scripture, you'll find out that's how old he was. You got Isaac as a baby, how old, maybe he's a toddler now, I don't know. But she finds that the older boy is persecuting the younger, and you got to watch out for that even among siblings. We have to watch out for it in the school. We have to watch, I mean, kids are that way. It's just human nature. How many of you ever remember in school some bigger fella picking on you? Do you ever remember that? Or were you the bigger fella picking on somebody? Whichever way it was, it happens. And in the old days, kids had to kind of fix it themselves. Nowadays, parents, the law, the judges, everybody else gets into it. It's crazy. But anyway, here's the problem now between Ishmael and Isaac, and Sarah spots it. I can imagine the envy, jealousy going on between these two women. It still happens. Anyway, wherefore she said unto Abraham, now his name is changed from Abram, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. Now, he loved Ishmael, and no doubt about it, and he was, and you'll find a reference to it in the New Testament. He was Abram's seed, of course. But he has to do what is right here, and he does what's right. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Now, I want to stop there because God's going to make a covenant with Abraham. And this is where Islam tries to steal something today and claim the covenant was not made with Isaac but with Ishmael, and that the Bible is wrong when it says the covenant was made with Abraham and Isaac. Now, I want you to see the New Testament back up on this verse right here. It says here that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Now, you got to remember, God is planning to bring the Messiah through the seed of Abraham later on up the line. Now, is it right for us to trace it back to Isaac or to Ishmael? That's the question. So go with me to Romans chapter 9 and pick it up in verse 7 of Romans chapter 9. I could go to Hebrews, but it'd pretty much say the same thing. But Paul, of course, is the great authority on what he's saying here, as God used him to write so much in the New Testament. And so I go to Romans chapter 9 and verse 7. Neither, because they are the seed of Abraham, are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Now, he's saying here, because they are the seed of Abraham. All right, Ishmael was of the seed of Abraham, but he's talking about the covenant. He's talking about the relationship with the Jewish people. So he says here, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. So here you have the confirmation of one of the greatest Christians, but was also one of the greatest rabbis or teachers or lawyers, before he was saved in Judaism. And here you have Paul saying this, and it's also repeated in Hebrews. Now, this is what a big part of the fuss is still today, as they try to go back all the way to Ishmael, and they try to go back and say God made the covenant with him and not Isaac. And yet any history book, almost any dictionary, will tell you, and the writings are plentiful, Muhammad started Islam in about 600 plus years after Christ. You can't go back here and claim something that did not happen, did not exist. Now, again, there's so much we'd like to say on it, but if you go back to the beginning, including what we hear in the news today, the crisis with ISIS and all that, we need to understand when Islam got started. Muhammad was 40 years old. He could not read or write. He married a very wealthy, older woman whose husband, I assume, had been killed or dead. It was that money that financed him. And the caravans on the trade routes, of course, over there, that's where her riches were. And through her, he had access to the money. Now, he was out of Saudi Arabia. We forget that. Muhammad came out of Saudi Arabia. Most of the hijackers came out of Saudi Arabia that flew the planes into our towers. And Saudi Arabia today does not have America's best interest in mind. They are using us every kind of way. And there was a whole pile of rich leadership out of Saudi Arabia that was in America when the planes hit the towers in 9/11. And while all the airports was closed and other planes could not take off, our American government allowed them to take off and go home. Now, that's why the conspiracy theorists point to some things that are hard to explain. and they really are hard to explain. But we have paid the bills, went over and fought the war free in Kuwait, didn't take the oil and didn't take any money for it, and then went on in later on against Saddam Hussein and all that business. Now, when Donald Trump says what he said about Muslims and they all go nuts over it, he's telling the truth. Telling the truth. When he says they hate us, they do.
And
when he said it'd be a good idea to keep them all out, I say amen. That'd be my opinion too. Now, he may have some radical stuff, and I'm not trying to pick him, but by the way, if he wins, I'll vote for him over Hillary, and that's just my opinion. But anyway, with all that said, it's shocking the news media. I saw a spot the other night where a newsman was interviewing Trump, and he was jumping on him because he said, the Muslims hate us. So the newsman was saying, you're saying that 1.7 billion Muslims hate us? And where all the scholars say there's only about 100,000 of them that are radicalized. Now, Trump said back to him, that's a lie. Now, he uses that word pretty easy, but he said, that's a lie, and he was right. Well, there's more than that in the ISIS army over there. More than that, there's about 37 different groups of fighters in Syria alone. We don't know who's fighting who's using our weapons, who's getting our money. It's the biggest chaos you've ever seen in your life going on over there right now. But it is a lie, far more than 100,000, because if they believe their religious book, they are commanded to not only hate, but kill Jews and Christians. We're all infidels. We deserve to die if we will not convert. Now you say, well, that's mean. Well, it's mean on their part. And they're the ones chopping off the heads, brother. But Saudi Arabia produced Muhammad. He come out of there, married a rich widow, and you need to understand that when he left, when he left Mecca's in Saudi Arabia, when he left there, he took a journey of 250 miles down to Medina. To this day, that's a religious pilgrimage that is referred to, and you'll hear it in the news every now and then, what it was called, Hira, I believe it is the trip that Muhammad took from Mecca to Medina. He goes down there, he finds a whole bunch of people worshiping a lot of different gods, and I forget, 300 gods, and he picked one god to represent his religion, and that god was the moon god. And when he said, no gods but Allah, he was referring to all the rest of them. And so, while some say he started off preaching peace, he quickly went to the sword and conquered. And picking that moon god, and you still see the crescent moon over the mosque. We was preaching in church last Tuesday in Orlando, and right out of the back door is a mosque up there, and it's got all the Arab writings on it, and Allah is great, and all that stuff. And it got the symbol of the crescent moon. That's the moon god that he picked. Then he gets himself about 10,000 warriors, and he marches back to Mecca and conquers there. That's the beginning of Islam. Now, he started having these visions. Islam put out a contract on Rushdie, how you say his name. He was the man that wrote the book on the satanic verses in the Quran, and they've had him on the wanted list to kill him ever since. But in that conquering with the sword, and he started to have the visions, and he did not write the Quran. His followers around him listened to what he said, and they wrote in the Quran. And he even admitted he did not know the voices that were speaking to him, whether they were of God or what he called the jinns. And the word jinns, G-I-N, in the Islam, is for demons or devils. So when Rushdie, or however you say his name, wrote that book on the satanic verses in the Quran, he was telling exactly what Muhammad said about it. But that was not politically correct in Islam, so his life's been threatened ever since. Now, that Quran being written, I have one. I have forced myself to read quite a bit in it. Maybe not every word, but enough to get an idea about it. And it's confusing, it's contradictory, it's ridiculous, everything that you can say about it. You say, well, and their argument on that is, well, that's the English translation. Well, there's several translations in English, and if anything, it probably helped it try to make sense, but it don't. Now, for instance, let me give you a story that they go by and I'm really not getting anywhere on where I wanted to go tonight. Too much. I wanted to tell you the difference in Sunni and Shiite. That's a religious split, and they're fighting. I'll just say this. They are fighting each other, and we are in the middle. We in the Western allies got in the middle of something we shouldn't have never got into. In that sense, we ought to went over there after they bombed our towers. We ought to went over there and whipped them and come home quick, and not tried to stay over and rebuild them. That was our stupidest mistake we ever made. When George Bush stood on the carrier and said, we won the war we had, it was time to come home. It was not time to keep sending our tax money over to rebuild them. All right. That's just truth. But anyway, story in the Quran, and you'll see what's behind some of this stuff today. Now, the Quran mentions Moses, it mentions Jesus, but don't let anybody deceive you, not in the right sense. See, they believe their Mahdi, their Messiah, their so-called Savior is going to return with Jesus kind of as his little servant boy with him. Yeah, that's their teaching. But with Moses, they tell this story. They say a man decided to follow Moses around to see what he could learn from Moses. So he followed Moses around, and lo and behold, Moses comes across a young person. It doesn't say exactly how old, but sounds like a teenager. In fact, I think it does intimate it's a teenager. And Moses kills the teenager. So the man that's following him around to learn from Moses, and I'm giving you the story out of their book. So the man following Moses around asks him a question. Why did you kill the young person, teenager? I can't understand that. Why did you do that? So here's the explanation. Moses said this. He perceived that this young person was going to grow up to bring dishonor on the family. So he prevents that by killing him ahead of time and saying that he thinks Allah will give them another kid that's better that will honor them. So you say, where did the honor killings come from? That's it. That's the background. Sitting in the balcony, sitting down here on these pews a number of years ago, we had Muslims that got converted to Christ by coming to the church services. One family did. The other young man was, his wife had, so, and she was not a Muslim. Here's a wrong thing. American girls marrying Muslim boys, that's just as stupid as it can get. And that's what had happened. So this American girl had gotten saved, and the Muslim young man, they had a little daughter, was talking about getting converted. He was right here in the service several times. His parents, who was Muslim, lived up here toward Kissimmee, set a trap for him. I'm hurrying because of time. Murdered him on their own front porch. Told the law they thought he was breaking in the house as a burglar. They had called him and asked him to come. Set up. Justification, he was about to dishonor the family by becoming a Christian. That's facts. I'm telling you right here in our area. Other couple sitting up there in the balcony with a little baby went home to Saudi Arabia to show mom and dad the baby. Meantime, they'd got converted here in our church, attended for 6 months. They were murdered when they got home to Saudi Arabia. They were machine gunned in their car, and a note was left on the windshield. This is what you get for converting to Christianity. It's an honor killing. Where does it come from? Moses killed a teenager to keep him from dishonoring the parents later on. That is pure, stupid baloney. And yet, that's the kind of stuff that motivates a lot of the bad stuff you're hearing in the news. And here's the sad part, folks. They're teaching Islam in our public schools where we can't dare mention the name of Christ. They'll teach other religions somewhat too, but Islam is the one that's being pushed. It's being pushed from the White House down in to try to indoctrinate our young people that it's all right. Now that's a mystery of the right out of hell as far as I'm concerned. It's just, you can't hardly explain it. But that's going on. You might have heard, if you heard the spot on the radio today, where Dave Gibbs was speaking, just that 5 minutes that he puts on, he referred to the fact any religion except Christ can be taught in the public schools. That is really sad. What's behind it? I know it's the devil, but somehow or another, it's hard to understand. And it is something that could be so, I just touched a little bit of it tonight. You could teach on and on about how far off, not only in left field, but ridiculous that it is. And it is basically holding women in slavery. That's about what it amounts to. And the awful stuff that goes on. And the example is taken from Muhammad's life, where he goes to a Jewish village. It has over 600 men in the Jewish village. He leads his army against it. We're talking about while he was alive. Now, this is the foundation of Islam based on him. He goes to a village with over 600 or 700 men in it. Right there in Medina, he goes to that same square piece of ground that you see on the news where the Black Rock is. Is it in Medina or Mecca? Maybe it's Mecca. And he digs trenches into that ground. Let's say it's like a great big, bigger than a baseball field. Digs trenches in it first. Then he takes the Jewish men and he kills them and their blood is drained off in the trenches. He takes the wives and kids into slavery. That was a whole village, over 600 men in his lifetime, and he set himself up like a man sitting in the judgment chair, and he brought them behind, in front of him, and he pronounced death for all of them. And that's all written up in fact in history. And that's used as an example today by ISIS in all the bad stuff you're hearing. What Muhammad did is justification and giving them right to do it. So if America is stupid enough to let this thing come in, our grandkids are going to pay a price. We may pass on before it gets that bad, but it's getting bad fast. In London, in France, in Spain, I read you a quote from a man in Spain Sunday night. They're beginning to realize what a crazy thing they done in letting all these millions come in. And now there's certain parts of the cities, even their own policemen, afraid to go into. And in many cases, and they've tried it time or two here in America, and there was a big fuss in our Congress because some of the states, like Florida and others, was passing laws saying we will not have a judge or anybody judged by Sharia law. It's got to be by our laws. That's where it ought to be. But some have already tried that. They're doing it in London. They're doing it in Spain. And they say, all right, we got the majority in the community, so we're going to go by our law. And that's bad business. All right. Now, if somebody asks you, don't Islam go back to Abraham? Don't it go back to Ishmael? No, it don't. It don't at all. All you're talking about out of Ishmael, his descendants, by the way, you read it close, Hagar picked him a wife and picked him an Egyptian wife because Hagar was an Egyptian. And so that race of people, many tribes, many different divisions, but Islam didn't exist back then. If they had anything that was close to being right in what they worshiped, it was the Jews' religion. And they dwelt in the midst of it. And the Jews had a lot of what we'd call today Jewish proselytes. There was a problem with it when Moses led all the Jews out of Egypt. A mixed multitude also came out with them. It was not as devout, perhaps, but it is crazy to try to say Islam goes back to Abraham and Ishmael, and the covenant was with Ishmael. No, it wasn't. The covenant that produced the Messiah was in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And that's the Bible quote. All right, little history, but we got to stay focused.